The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
And welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kate Murray, joined in the studio once again by Stuart Robson. Ali Moreno is here too. We've also got Gab Marcotti with us. And a little later, we're going to be hearing from Matthijs de Ligt because the famous interviewer, Stuart Robson, has been at it again.
All right.
Yeah,
didn't get anything out of him, but
a little bit you'll see coming up a bit later on. But we will start the show with the news that Cristiano Ronaldo has travelled back to England to meet with everybody at Manchester United and discuss his future. We all know that he wasn't on the pre-season due to personal reasons, and now the reports are that he is in talks about what his future will be with the club. What's the latest there, Gab?
Well, I think obviously he was away for personal reasons. He missed a tour that was with the club's permission, but I think it's an open secret that he wouldn't mind moving on if the right position appeared. And equally from Manchester United's perspective, despite what Erik ten Hag says, I think a lot of people legitimately question if you're going to reform the team, if you're going to change your style of play, if you're going to play this aggressive 4-3-3 high press, does that suit Cristiano Ronaldo at age 37? Because he's still going to be the best player on your team if he's there. Normally, you would build around him, but then you got a long-term project. Are you going to build around a guy who's got just another year left on his contract? Then obviously, there's the option for the other one. And then I think there's a tactical argument too, the pressing argument, which is that I looked up the numbers for a piece I did. Since 2015, according to StatsBomb data, which is as far back as the data goes, he's always ranked last or second to last in among forwards and wingers in pressing and defensive pressures. Not because he's bad or lazy, but because evidently it's not something he was asked to do very often. So you put all those things together and you could see how it could be mutually beneficial if they found the right landing spot for him.
Yeah, and that was the reports as well, wasn't it, Gab, that if a suitable offer were to arrive, he wanted to be able to leave the club. Where could he actually go?
It's tough, and it's tough for the simple reason that he would have to take a big pay cut. I think beyond the 25%, which he already has to take because, across the board, because United didn't qualify for the Champions League. But the reality is that already puts him outside of the reach of all but 8 or 10 clubs in Europe. And a lot of those clubs either have different, they either have center forwards already, or they have different tactical plans that Cristiano wouldn't necessarily fit, or they're not in the Champions League. So I think it's extremely difficult. We've seen him linked with Atletico Madrid, obviously Atletico, a club very close to his agent, George Mendes. But equally, if you're Atleti, you've got to move players out, I think, before you can think of bringing him in, starting with Antoine Griezmann, for example. And you have to ask the question, how does he fit in? And, you know, would he want to go to Atletico or, given his past at Real Madrid, obviously, he entertained City, but, it's one thing City with Pep Guardiola winning titles. It's another thing in Atletico Madrid, especially in Atletico with their style of play. So I'm slightly skeptical about that one.
The fans seem pretty torn on that at Atleti, whether or not Cristiano Ronaldo would be a good fit to come there. Should they be open to it, Ale?
They will be torn until he starts scoring goals. And that's how fans work. You may sit now and say, no way, no. Cristiano, Atletico Madrid, Wanda Metropolitano, no. We're a proud fan base. We do not want Cristiano because of the behavior that he's had in the past against Atletico Madrid fans and the productivity that he's had against Atletico Madrid itself. The truth is, if he's scoring goals, they're going to want him on the team. The moment he starts scoring goals, they don't care about whatever the history is from the past. They care about what's happening in the now. In terms of whether this is a fit overall, I don't think so. If you're Atletico Madrid, you just got rid of an agent goal-scoring superstar, former superstar, in Luis Suarez. And while Luis Suarez is not at the same level as Cristiano Ronaldo, you're going back the same path. Maybe you squeeze 1 year out of Cristiano and that's about it. But do you, as an organization, decide to make all the moves that you need to make in order to make room for this guy? And oh, by the way, we talk about teams that do not match up tactically. Well, what about Diego Simeone and demanding Cristiano Ronaldo to defend in his own half? Is that going to happen? No, I don't see it happening. I don't think so. I don't think this is a match.
What about you, Robert?
Absolutely. You know, just what they were saying. When they play against the very best teams, both in Spain and in Europe, they drop into their own third and they then try and have two or three passes to try and get themselves enough time to get into a higher area of the pitch. Ronaldo doesn't want to come back and do what lots of the centre forwards have had to do for Atletico Madrid. And he's now got to make all the way up the field. He wants to play for a team that are on top of the game, dominant, crosses coming into the box, balls played to him in and around the box so he can get turned and get shots away. Atletico Madrid's not that sort of team. They might be against the weaker Spanish sides, La Liga sides, but not in the big games.
How wild is it, though, Robbo, that we're talking about one of the best players in world football, maybe in world football history as well, definitely up there, and there seems to be no takers for him?
Because there's certainly only ways, there's only one way he can really play at the moment, you know, with a team that are dominant, that get crosses into the box, because he's changed his style of play. He's not the player that used to run with the ball and go past people and score goals himself. He needs other players to provide the ammunition. He needs balls played into his feet in and around the box. He needs crosses coming into the box because he is still very good in the air. So there's not that many sides that are going to take a player that can just do that.
But to his credit, to Cristiano Ronaldo's credit, he has recognized that he's a different player now.
Absolutely.
So over the last couple of seasons, he said, you know what? The stepovers out in the sidelines, that's not working for me anymore. Where can I be effective? Well, it's inside the 18-yard box. And he has shown to be the guy that can provide that final touch with consistency. But then, in order to build a team around a guy, you can't do it for one season. You can't do it for a year and a half. You have to be able to do it and plan for 5 years, a decade. If indeed you're making the choice of building a team around one guy, you're changing everything, the structure of a whole group for one guy, for 1 year. That is a lot to ask and a very expensive project at that.
Go on, Gab.
I was going to say, I brought it up in the show, I wrote a column about it. There is a team where I think he could fit with a manager who he adores, who he's worked with before.
Who you adore as well.
I also have a simpatico for. You know, a team that's very successful, that plays in the Champions League, a team he knows well, where he spent a long time. Would it be a perfect fit? No. But I don't think there is a perfect fit at this stage of his career. But I'm talking about Real Madrid, of course. And you could imagine, despite what's happened before and last summer, saying the chapter was closed, you could perhaps imagine a situation with Benzema a year older, World Cup coming up, maybe some situation where he maybe plays some games leading up to the World Cup. Obviously, Real Madrid didn't get Mbappe. I think financially, for 1 year or 2 years, I don't think it really would be an issue for Real Madrid to meet his wage demands. I think he would be okay with perhaps sharing time as the World Cup approaches. Post-World Cup, who knows? If France go all the way, Benzema might come back tired. Maybe there's a situation there. Benzema, I think, is the kind of center forward who's, you know, a 9 and a 10 at the same time, who's so smart in the way he moves. He could do a lot of the hard work for Cristiano, could set Cristiano up. Maybe that, to me, when I go around Europe and I apply the process of elimination, that's really the only place that would make sense, unless he decides to say, oh, let me make an emotional decision, let me go back to Sporting Lisbon, which he incidentally already appears to have ruled out, or does something like that. But otherwise, I don't see too many other potential options. And even then, it's all down to Florentino there.
I have to say, hold on a second. 1 second. when it comes to Karim Benzema and him once again opening the space for Cristiano and said, I'll do all the work for you, Cristiano. No. Karim Benzema has walked away from that. He's moved on to an entirely different level in his career and in the profile of a player that he has become. He did the work for Ronaldo for a very long time. He's not going back in time to say, I'm going to do the work for you, Cristiano, so you go score the goals. No. And if Karim, if you're thinking about it, no.
I feel as though Gab is trying to start the Ronaldo back to Real Madrid.
Well, I knew he was going to say that because he spoke to me about it.
And he said it on this show the other day.
The only thing I'd say is that if Vinicius Jr. and Benzema got a great understanding with Vinicius Jr. playing on the left-hand side, would you want to swap that? Would you want to then have three players that don't come back and defend? Because Vinicius Jr. doesn't come back and defend. He stays up the field so they can counter-attack. Benzema will come back to get the ball, but he doesn't come back and actually defend. He'll try and nick balls off midfield players. And then you've got Ronaldo that won't want to come back. I don't think that fits Real Madrid. If Benzema's not playing, that's okay, but Benzema has to be the key player week in, week out.
Okay, so we're ruling out Ronaldo to Real Madrid here, Gab. What about Chelsea?
You know what? You could rule it out. I'm not done ruling him out. Look at the number of assists Benzema had last season. I think there has to be some give and take, and the give and take can be from Cristiano possibly saying, look, there's a World Cup coming up. I want to bide my time a little bit. You can't demand.
Hang on, Gab. Ronaldo, no. Give or take. When has Ronaldo ever given some and taken some? He'll do what he wants to do. He's done it at Juventus. He's done it at Manchester United. He's not going to suddenly say, oh, I fit into a system here. He does what he wants to.
I think both Ronaldo and Benzema want to win. Benzema has shown how unselfish he is. Honestly, you can come up with a better solution. I know, Kay, you just asked me about Chelsea. Never say never, because we have now an acting sporting director at Chelsea who I don't think has ever fulfilled that role before, and he's kind of learning on the job. And he also happens to be the owner, right? Todd Bowley, or one of the owners. I would find this very, very difficult. I don't see how, we talked about managers who are all about the system and their system managers and their one tactical discipline and they like the press and they like players who follow their instructions at all times. And Cristiano Ronaldo just simply doesn't fit that at this stage. You know, could you plunk him up front and would he score 25 goals? Yes. Would he necessarily make Chelsea better to the degree that they would justify the expense? I'm not so sure. I think Chelsea are going in another direction. Now, in the end, of course, Bowley's the boss. He says, you know, my money or my ownership group's money. Sure, let's make this happen. But I'd be very, very surprised if Tuchel signed off on this.
But yesterday we heard from Thomas Tuchel criticising his players, saying that the mentality wasn't there. We know this club needs goals. Shouldn't they be pouncing on a player who's a mentality monster and scores loads of goals?
To a certain degree, you're right. But Tuchel wants players that fit what he wants to do. He's a manager that is a top-class coach, and he demands that the players do what he wants them to do. Ronaldo, over the last 10 years, when he was younger under Alex Ferguson, he probably had to do what he was told. But since he's become a world-class star and a brilliant player and a top goalscorer, He doesn't set to any game plan. And Tuchel won't say, just play up front and do what you want. Don't go and press the ball and don't close people down. Just do what you want. They can't afford to do that. They're not good enough at the moment, Chelsea.
If this is indeed about a give and take, well, if you're Cristiano Ronaldo, you see what the options are out there for you and you seem to be running out of names. The only way more options become available to you is if you are actually willing to take a major, and I mean major pay cut. And I'm not comfortable telling anybody to take a pay cut. No, you do you. You sign your contract, whatever that contract is, then you get paid. But I'm just saying, from his perspective, if these options that are available are running out, how do you find other options? How do you find other alternatives? Well, only other teams will come out and say, yeah, we'll take a chance on Cristiano Ronaldo if we can afford him. The only way that they can afford him is that if he's willing to work with those teams. So if it is about a give and take, there's one person that controls this, and it's Cristiano Ronaldo, and saying, I want to play in a team that is going to give me an opportunity to do the things that at this point in my career I can still do well, and that's score goals. Who's that team? I'll come and play for you. I'll give you the hometown discount, and we'll have some fun this season. That's the only way it works. Otherwise, we're going to have the same conversation about Manchester United and Ronaldo, not anybody else.
Yeah, we will be continuing that conversation tomorrow because Mark Ogden will be on the show with more Cristiano Ronaldo chat. Dan's back too, so make sure you join us for that. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Okay, we've all been trying to avoid this, Ale. Rafi Nyaso.
Uh-huh.
Bit of a tongue twister, but you get the message. Basically, everybody is very excited about Rafinha from what we've seen in the preseason with Barcelona. In fact, even the Madrid press are all over this player right now. It is looking like he's going to have quite the ceiling at Barcelona, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And yet he's not going to start ahead of Ousmane Dembele. First game of the season, if Dembele is healthy, he is going to be the starter on the right-hand side. Rafinha has been impressive. And in watching the game against Real Madrid, not only Rafinha, but the whole attacking core for Barcelona were impressive, not only with the ball at their feet, but their willingness to press higher up the field. Press and counter-press and force turnovers. And then once they force the turnovers, then Rafinha goes and does this. And then, obviously, we're going to speak about him. Overall, what I was most impressed about Rafinha and the whole attacking group was that when they did not have the ball, there was a willingness to get around the ball and get the ball right back, which we haven't seen for a long time with Barcelona with consistency. This is going back to the days of early days of Guardiola, where they're pressing and winning the ball in their attacking third, when they're getting that possession, regaining that possession, and then going on to score. What Rafinha's role is for this team is still to be determined, because it's going to depend on what version of Dembele shows up. If it is the version of Dembele that we saw late in the season last year, Dembele will start. And then Rafinha will have to find another place on the field.
Well, I feel as though you've already given us what I was going to ask you, because we've been talking about that forward line for Barcelona. We saw two different starting lineups in the forward line in the first half and the second half. So it was Ansu Fati on the left, Lewandowski through the middle, and Rafinha on the right in that first half of action. Then Dembele came on, Rafinha moved to the left and was subbed out just past the hour mark. We got Robbo's pick yesterday for his starting three. Sounds like you're going for Dembele then.
I'm going Dembele down the right, Lewandowski down the middle, and a healthy Ferran Torres down the left.
Oh.
To begin the season.
Right.
And the only reason I have Ferran Torres playing there is because I think he is better equipped to be a second guy in the box. Lewandowski is going to be the first option. Ferran Torres will be the one closing the gap at the far post. And then he'll also look to combine through the middle. He has that ability to come off the line. So you have variety. When the Dembele, a guy that takes you out on the outside with a change of speed. And then you have from the left-hand side a guy who's willing to come in and combine with the guys coming underneath like Pedri and Gavi. You want variety in an attacking core group. This is what you will get with Barcelona.
And what Ali's saying is absolutely right, because one player can run with the ball. You've got Lewandowski, who's a goal scorer, and Ferran Torres, of all the players in their attacking line, he's got the best movement. Mm. He's got the best understanding, because he has played on the right, he's played as the second centre-forward, he's played as the centre-forward, or off the left-hand side, and he makes good runs. He's not got the skill to go past people like Dembele, like Ansu Fati, like Rafinha, but his movement off the ball is very good. I would, of course, love to see Ansu Fati play, because I think he's going to be an outstanding player. But in terms of the shape of the team, Torres may be the player.
What about playing Dembele and Rafinha?
I wouldn't do it if I were coaching this team. Too many variables defensively with both Dembele and Rafinha. And the way that they're going to help my team, once I set them up, is their willingness to get the work done in the attacking half. That press that I just mentioned will be important. I don't know that both Rafinha and Dembele are willing to do that work consistently, so I have to sacrifice something somewhere. And I think Ferran Torres gives you something different that Rafinha does not. Overall, though, when you look at Barcelona, I think the one thing that you have to be most encouraged about is the fact that you have so much variety and you have options. Think of Ronald Koeman and his time at Barcelona, where he's starting at one point. This is during the season. This is not preseason. During the season, the starter for Barcelona through the middle was Ferran Jugla. That was a player playing up top for Barcelona. Spin it forward and look at all the options that are available to Xavi. It's a great problem to have, a major problem, but a great problem to have, that you have so many different options of players that can give you so many different things.
Well, they seem to be convincing in the preseason and with the signings that they have made in the summer, because even the odds makers are giving them more of a chance now than they were in the Champions League. They've moved up to seventh favourite, but that is with Real Madrid and Chelsea, same odds there. How do you see their Champions League chances this season, Ale? Can they go all the way and win it with this side?
They'll have to defend better, because once teams do break through that initial pressure, then in the back it can get a little stretch. And a little
With De Jong playing as a centre-half?
Well, it gets exciting. Things get exciting once you break through that press. I love the counter-press, and I love the fact that they are getting the ball back in the attacking half. But if teams are able to break through that, then, mommy!
Okay, would your mind change a little bit if reports are to be believed that Barcelona are much closer than Chelsea are to securing the signature of Jules Koundé?
That would help. And that's part of what is making this team so intriguing and so exciting to watch in the attacking half. But then, okay, they seem to be building this team correctly, the right way, which we haven't said about Barcelona for a long time. And I'm not even going to get into the finances or how they're able to do this, because somebody else is going to have to figure this out.
Okay, we'll hear from Laporte around that.
Great. Fantastic. Sure. I'm sure he's going to have a lot of great information. The truth is that you're looking at a team that is becoming more of a complete picture, which Barcelona has not been over the last few seasons.
What do you think of their Champions League chances, Robbo?
I think they're quite high. I mean, maybe not to win it, but they certainly go quite some way. And if they do get Koundé, they've got more pace in the back, a defender that makes good decisions. And with Araujo, who I think got better and better as the season wore on, he was probably one of their successful players last year. That's a good defensive partnership. So I think Koundé is an exceptional player. He can play on the right-hand side of a back three. If they want to go with a back three, he can play on the right-hand side. He can go play as a right-back on occasions. Great spring, quick, and he reads danger.
Yep, well, we're going to keep up to date with that one, but it does look, if reports are to be believed, that it could be Barcelona that will get Jules Koundé come the end of the summer. Just taking a look at the cash that they have splashed, and you mentioned their finances, Ale, so Joan Laporta has been speaking about them again.
Okay.
He actually says that the club is economically sound.
Hey!
He says the club is back to being sound economically. Barca was in a critical state at the point of folding, and we had to act fast. We were given a club that was on the verge of folding, and now it has not only overcome this stage, but is back in a financial position where it can face any challenge in front of it. Gab Marcotti. Is it worth the risk mortgaging their future? Or is this just talk from the president? We can really believe they're back? Or is this what he should be saying? Or is this what he generally believes?
I have no idea what that man generally believes, frankly. Laporta's a lawyer, right? But that said, football-wise, yeah, they're sound. They're back, as Ali said. Like, they've added a whole bunch of great players. We can debate whether some of those are the right signings and or not, but there's no question that they're a lot stronger than they were. Economically sound, yeah, you're economically sound now because you basically took money up front for future income. We all know that they sold 25% of their Liga rights for X number of years in exchange for money up front now. And what this means, this season, I think it was around 160 million that they got, which means that next season they'll be getting 40 million less in the year after that. And then if the Liga pie grows, then they'll be getting less and less. They'll be giving up more and more. So that's something to think about. If it was that simple to do, it's like, let me just action this lever and let me have all this money to spend, then I would imagine that other clubs would do it too. The reason they don't do it is because they don't want to mortgage their future. They don't want to be in a situation where, this is essentially debt that we're talking about. It's debt by another name, because you're giving away a quarter of your future domestic television revenue. And I think it's exceptionally risky. And I think there's a lot of You know, there were a lot of Barcelona officials who felt the same way. There's people who left the club because they didn't agree with it. And it feels to me as if Laporta is rolling the dice a little. And I say this based on the information we have. Now, there's information that we don't have. They do have the right, for example, to buy the rights back. We don't know what the terms of that are. Maybe Laporta signed some terrific deal to get the rights back, you know, when Barcelona are in a position to do that again. Maybe. I genuinely don't know. But based on what we know now, it seems to me like an enormous gamble.
Do you think Barcelona fans should be worried, Ale?
Yes. Because you're giving up so much for the future. The problem is, as a fan, and this is the part where you need a little bit of perspective, you're going to fall in love with what you see from this team on the field. So then you'll forget about the levers, the first lever, the second lever, the TV rights, the naming rights, all of these things, because you see that on the field, everything is working. And it's not in your best interest to look behind the curtain. So what you do is you ignore the curtain altogether and you say, I'm sure they're doing a great job behind there and how they're getting all this money to work out. Fantastic. I don't care because the team is winning. This is how fans work. A lot of fans are just saying, give me a winning team. I don't care how we get there. Put us back in a Champions League final. Put us back in a situation where we're winning La Liga. If we win trophies, if we win titles, if we're beating Real Madrid and we're entertained, I don't care how we got to that point.
The problem they'll have as supporters is that maybe when they haven't got so much money coming in the next couple of years and those players that they're seeing doing so well, we might have to sell one or two of those to make the money up. So those good players might have to be sold. Yeah.
How do you keep guys like Pedri? How do you keep guys like Gavi? These are guys that eventually are going to hit the market. And they're going to be at a point in which it's going to be a major investment. And so it is very short-sighted. And your concern, if you're Barcelona, you're concerned about the now. You're concerned about winning these games, about winning this league, about winning this Champions League. But you're not looking 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, where that money that they're essentially forfeiting and saying, you know what, guys? We'll worry about that when we get there. I'm not sure that that's the best approach.
Cap?
I agree with Ali. Look, there was another option, and it was a decision Laporta chose not to take, right? That option would have been, guys, we inherited a house on fire. We were in a coma, as Laporta himself said. We need therapy. And the way we're going to grow out of this is what made us strong the last time around when we were so dominant under Pep. We're going to do it through La Masia, through being smart. We're gonna push our youngsters. You know, Barca fans, you've always been with us. I think they always will be with them. The fans who actually show up, who buy the gear, you're not gonna turn on them. And you make a calculated risk. And the risk is that last season, despite 6 months of Koeman and Ferran Juca and all this nonsense, they still finished second. They still, in normal conditions, I think, would have gotten out of their Champions League group. They might have won the Europa League. You would assume that had they been more conservative this year, you can call it austerity if you like, but, you know, give me Depay and Aubameyang up front. They're not as good as Lewandowski. But it's what? They don't cost as much as Lewandowski either. Put those things in place. Grow with the kids. You might not win La Liga next year, but, you know, I think you're still a shoe-in to finish. You finish second this year. You'll finish second, maybe third, but you'll still be back in the Champions League. You grow your revenue. Champions League, I think you're still going to be in the top eight. That's a realistic goal. And once you get there, who knows? Maybe Ansu Fati keeps growing. Maybe you reach the semifinals, the final, maybe you even win it. Do that for a while. Get the club back to where it is, where it's supposed to be, on sound financial footing. And then you can start thinking about things. But to me now, it seems that, like as you said, Kate, they've mortgaged the future. They're spending money that they don't have, that they will earn in the future. They're spending it now, and, you know, they just spent it on Lewandowski, who's 33, and whatever else. So, you know, this to me, these are the actions of somebody who wants to get reelected, and that's the risk when you have, you know, Barcelona, it's a wonderful democracy, but the problem is, you know, politicians, it's not their money. They're not going to be around in the long term to pick up the pieces, just as Bartomeu isn't around in the long term to pick up the pieces. You know, wasn't his money. He's gone now. You know, he's not paying the price for it, other than probably being hated by a lot of Barcelona fans.
There's still a massive draw, though. We saw that with Saturday's figures in the friendly action here in the United States. There's still a massive attraction. 200,000 plus fans turning out for these games. Yes, these are all top sides in the likes of Green Bay, in the likes of Orlando. Las Vegas, more understandable. It's a Clásico. It's an event city. When you see these figures, when you see the turnout, you can understand why, by the way, the three presidents of the clubs who are hoping to continue for a European Super League all had dinner ahead of that Clásico. You can see why they are attracted to a Super League, surely.
Of course you can. I mean, it's not right. We don't want it to happen. But you can see because of those figures and the way the fans think of these clubs and the people that turn up to watch them and the joy they get from watching them. But we don't want it, do we? You know, they might want it, but we don't. I mean, that's, you've got to keep the integrity of football.
Yes, as I did mention, Laporta, Agnelli, Florentino Perez, all having dinner. Just speculation over what they may have been discussing. The option could still be open there for a Super League, Gab. Is there a chance that it could happen in the near future, especially with what we've been seeing just from friendly games here in the United States?
Yeah, I mean, look, with the friendly games, you got to remember, these guys come once a year, and all those attendances, 60,000, 70,000, you know, that's very impressive. But, you know, when Real Madrid and Barcelona sell out, they get more than that at home in their own stadiums. Juve hits 60,000 as well. I think one of the keys at this stage is it's going to be decided in court. July 11th and July 12th, we had the hearing at the European Court of Justice of the lawsuit brought by Barcelona, Real Madrid, and Juventus over UEFA and their stance and whether it's whether it violates competition law. December 15th is when we expect the Attorney General to give his ruling, and then we'll see if the other members of the jury agree with him. Probably in February, that's going to come out, and if they side with the Super League, then yeah, they will get their way. There are in-between situations. There's been talk about something like they have in basketball with the EuroLeague, where teams have 10-year licenses. Some teams do, some have shorter licenses. Some qualify every year. But the competition is very much owned by the clubs with the blessing of FIBA, the governing body of basketball. Barcelona and Real Madrid are very familiar with that system, of course, because they're basketball. They also have basketball teams, and they compete in it. And that's one potential option. That's the argument I think that they're going to make. They're going to say, look, this already exists in a different spot. Why shouldn't it exist in football? But you know, once you open that box, who knows? You know, maybe they'll maybe they can set up franchises in Asia, in North America. Maybe they'll, there's no limit to what you can do, you know, if they get the verdict they want. My guess is they'll probably come down in the middle, probably closer to the UEFA side. And everything is pretty much in play. This could be the single most important verdict in the game and sport. It could even be bigger than the Bosman ruling in 1996, frankly.
The Super League aside, you were at the game, the Bayern Man City game, Stuart. Were you surprised to see that turnout there, nearly 80,000?
Not surprised, because we knew that was going to be the case, but it was the enthusiasm of the fans, you know, and their knowledge, actually, of what was going on. I think the fans came from about 50 states, all 50 states they were talking about, and came from all around the world, these supporters. They made a great noise. The atmosphere was brilliant, and it made the game a good game. Even though we had two breaks, there was still the pressing of the ball. It was played at a high intensity. Man City were better than Bayern Munich, but it was a really good game, and the atmosphere was superb.
As for you as well, Ali, you've got a son in the youth sports system here. What's it been like for you to see the growth of soccer in the United States over these recent years?
Well, I don't know that people showing up to watch Real Madrid, Barcelona in Las Vegas is a correlation to the growth of the sport. I do think, however, that we have seen in Major League Soccer the growth of what the product of MLS is, what it was, what it is, and potentially what it could be. and the infrastructure, the awareness of what the league is all about. It's a process that continues to be about growing. The trajectory is positive. It seems to be heading in the right direction. And that's more what I'm interested in, because the one-off of people showing up at Lambeau Field to watch Manchester City or Bayern Munich, or people showing up in Las Vegas to watch Real Madrid Barcelona, and by the way, they were very supportive of Shakira, I got to tell you.
Yeah, heard.
they took sides in that whole situation. We know who the fans are supporting, and that's Shakira, and rightfully so. In any case, sidetrack. The one-offs is not, I don't think it's representative of the growth of the sport. It's what happens once these teams go back to their leagues, and whether the local teams, the MLS teams here in the United States, are able to draw from those crowds that go to the one-off games. If somehow you're able to build a bridge from this one-off games to your local team, that's where I think MLS benefits, and in turn soccer in this country benefits, that the casual fan that goes to these sort of events, that it becomes important enough for them to come to the game every Saturday.
So it's a good thing for MLS rather than a bad thing?
I think any time that we're watching the sport in this country, in this sort of environment, I think it's a good thing. But MLS has to be able to not only generate that connection, but maintain that connection. That those people that then come to the MLS games, that they are entertained by the product that they're seeing, that they are entertained by the whole experience. And then from there, I think they continue to take steps forward.
More talk about all of those teams that were involved in the friendly action in the United States over on our YouTube page. Make sure to click subscribe while you're there. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. What a transfer window it has been so far for Bayern. Matthijs de Ligt, the big star. Well, Sadio Mane as well. I mean, you could list them off already. And they say that they're not done yet. And what a start it is for Matthijs de Ligt at Bayern, because he was interviewed by Stuart Robson.
Hey!
Let's hear more from what he had to say.
Well, congratulations on what is a great move for you, a big move. What convinced you to join Bayern Munich?
First of all, thank you very much. What convinced me the most was, I think, the club. That the club wants you is obviously a big thing. I think the board really showed me that they wanted me to become a player of Bayern Munich. That also says a lot for me, because it's really important. And second of all, I think the club suits me really well. Mm-hmm. I think it's offensive football, hard trainings, high intensity, and I think that is something that I really search in a club, and I think that's perfect here in Bayern Munich.
Now, there's been a lot of talk about your leadership skills, you know, and you were 17, 18 at Ajax, being the leader, the captain, being a great personality. Was it difficult going to Juventus when the people you're playing with, Bonucci, Chiellini, Buffon, you know, they're all very experienced players, and you probably couldn't be the leader there, could you? You had to take a slight backward step.
Yeah, I think you could say that. It was, what you said, I was the captain in Ajax, and I felt like I had to lead the team also in a certain way. And obviously when you go to a team where they have this kind of legends in the defense and as a goalkeeper, it's for a guy of 19, it's maybe in the beginning really difficult to express yourself like you could. So, I think it's some way maybe it made me less myself. But obviously, I learned also a lot from these guys, and I tried to look every day to these guys to take as much as possible to become a better player and leader, maybe.
And so, what did you develop as a defender when you? Because you've talked about a different style of defending at Juventus as it was at Ajax, or it will be maybe at Bayern. What did you develop and what did you learn there?
Yeah, just a completely different style of defending, I think. What in Ajax was that you pressed really high, that you were taking your man, you took risks because you know the risk will get the benefit, you know.
So you're more worried about what was in front of you than what was behind you?
Yeah, in general, yes. Yeah. And in Juventus it's the other way around. I think Juventus was more about behind you.
Was that because Bonucci was not quite as quick as maybe some of the others?
No,
or was
no.
that just the general way they wanted to defend?
Yeah, I think that's the general way how we wanted to defend. I think in Italy the pace of the league is maybe also a little bit slower, so you can permit it to stay a little bit more back, and obviously they won 4 World Cups with this kind of playing style. So I completely understand that they feel this is the right way to do it, but it's a completely different philosophy. But I came also to Juventus with the idea to play a little bit more attacking football because Sarri was becoming the coach, and he had a really good name in the world of football, where he did amazing. They played amazing football with Napoli, they played amazing football with Chelsea. So yeah, I was expecting also to have like a little bit the Ajax style there. And unfortunately after 1 year this was immediately...
Then Andrea Pirlo took over.
Yeah.
Every great player, and I'm sure you're going to be a great player, and are getting to become a great player, has one major attribute that they can always fall back on that makes them stand out from anybody else. What is your major attribute?
I think what makes me... it's not so easy to say about yourself, but what I heard a lot of times is that people see me as a really big professional, like an example for other players. I wouldn't say I'm the best defensive defender, the best attacking defender, the fastest defender, the strongest defender. But I think it's the mindset,
the consistency.
The consistency, the mindset, the will to win, the determination. And I think that's my biggest quality, I think.
Stuart's ready to be a talk show host, Saturday Night TV. Yeah, brilliant interview once again. Now, what stood out to you? What was your biggest takeaway from this one?
He was a really nice lad. He spoke very well. We spoke for another 15, 20 minutes after that interview. I don't think he reached his potential at Juventus because he had to play second fiddle maybe to Bonucci when he came out with the ball. I thought he was always a little bit limited. And I think he said that almost, that when he went there, even on the ball, he thought he was going to be a player. And it almost, they had to pass it to Bonucci because he had the quality of passing over longer ranges. And he didn't express himself. What we didn't hear there, he also had to play on the left-hand side, which wasn't his favourite. He also had it was never settled. I think they bought him to play alongside Chiellini. But I would say he's a player or a young man that wants to go a long way. And his character and his attitude really stood out.
How's he going to be remembered back in Serie A in Italy, Gab?
For me, I think he's going to be remembered as a great pro who landed at the club at the wrong time. I was really intrigued by what he said about Sarri and how that was, part of the idea of him going there. That was when Juve were going to have this revolution, they were going to play Sarri ball and do all the things that the league talked about. Halfway through the season, for a number of different reasons, including perhaps the fact that it didn't suit Cristiano, they changed. They changed to a different style of play, and I think that has certainly penalized them. The previous season was a bit all over the place, but I thought he did all right there. And then, with Allegri again, they went back to this style of play, which probably doesn't suit him, but did suit Bonucci and Chiellini. When you've got, veteran center backs, you have to make a decision. And Chiellini is a legend. Bonucci's a very good player. Juve weren't going to turn on those guys. Maybe they should have with hindsight, maybe they should have made a cleaner break with the past. But it's always easy to talk with hindsight, and when it came down to it, you know, he had 2 years left on his contract, and I can understand why he opted not to stick around. And from Juve's perspective, they got a good, they certainly got their money back, and they can finance their the rest of their summer transfer campaign.
I'll tell you what's been very interesting. After getting to work with Matthijs de Ligt, Julian Nagelsmann has been pretty vocal about Juve's training methods. Okay. We're going to hear what he had to say. He said, I talked to de Ligt after the training session, and he said the training session was the hardest in the last 4 years. At the same time, it was hard, but not that hard.
Oh, okay.
He didn't play that many minutes last season, and I heard that in Italy, it's not easy to stay fit. We have to train hard with him. Has something changed with the...
Well, I was going to say, Italy was always the place where the fitness levels were great.
Especially Juve.
And we've heard about Antonio Conte with his coach at Tottenham saying the players have never worked quite so hard. I think Nagelsmann is just trying to make a point that he's going to have to work hard with De Ligt, and De Ligt isn't quite fit at the moment and won't probably start the games. But overall, I can't think there's too much wrong with the Italian fitness level.
Why has he said this, though, Nagelsmann?
He's taken this opportunity to essentially give himself a pat in the back. Yeah. Hey, guys, our training sessions are excellent. We're really pushing the players. See those guys in Juventus? They don't know what they're doing. We now know how to run a training session. I mean, it is a perfect opportunity for a manager to say to himself, I am great. Yeah. My training sessions are great.
Has word filtered back to Italy that what he said, Gab?
Oh, it has, and you know, people have commented on it. You know, Bertucci coming out and saying, "Well, you should be respectful." It's funny, if you really want to go there, if we really want to create something out of poor Julian Nagelsmann and get him in trouble, he's also having a go at Erik ten Hag, isn't he? Because he said, you know, last 4 years. Well, first of those years, he was at Ajax, so. You know, maybe Erik ten Hag is soft too, Julian. Maybe that's what you're saying, right? So it's not just an Italian thing. Maybe he's having a pop at United. Maybe Nagelsmann's disrespecting Manchester United. There you go.
I think it might be a bit of silly season. We talk about silly season with the transfers, but some of these coaches are saying quite a lot this summer, aren't they?
Well, I just sensed, and I'm going to say I had another interview with one with Nagelsmann, a very quick one.
Another interview with the talk show.
They look like a man who was under a bit of pressure. I think he's under pressure. I think Bayern Munich didn't play at their best last season, although they won Bundesliga. Even he said it in the interview, we need to be better and I need to win everything. And I just sense that he's a man under, even on the side of the pitch, usually he's quite confident. He didn't look confident when Man City were playing around them. He might have one or two problems.
And can I just tell you, it's not just Nagelsmann. If you are a player like De Ligt, and you've had a difficult time at Juventus, and now you're coming as a big signing to Bayern Munich, the first thing you want to do is create a relationship with a manager.
Hey, your training is great. That's the hardest
I haven't been pushed like this. You are now creating a bond, a connection. However, is it that you're playing?
I said to Kay, you're the best presenter we've had on the show.
That's right. That's what
I thought you meant that.
No, I did. Kay.
You are playing
the game. So you said he's flattering Nagelsmann.
You are playing a game. Look, apparently the relationship with Sarri wasn't all that great. His time at Juventus wasn't all that great. Relationship with Allegri wasn't all that great. So the first thing that you're going to address in this new situation when you're starting over is, I'm going to make my relationship with this guy, the manager, the best it can possibly be. Come on now, that's a layup right there. That's a tapping from my kind of range.
Well, let's see how hard Bayern have been training this summer, because they will be in action in the German Super Cup against Leipzig. You can see that game on Saturday, 2:30 Eastern on ESPN+.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So the final four now in the Women's Euros, it's England against Sweden and Germany taking on France. The semi-finals are set. The first of those games will be England against Sweden tomorrow. And to look ahead to it, we have Steffi Jones and Danielle Slayton, who's in my seat.
Thanks, Kay. The seat nice and comfy. Danielle Slayton alongside Steffi Jones. Let's take a look ahead to the semifinal matchups. First, England and Sweden. What are your thoughts on England?
Well, I feel like they're the host. They had a lot of pressure, but they deal with it really good, and they have a squad. I mean, their offensive is so strong. They're like running over all the other teams. So it's going to be tough for the Swedish team to beat them. But I would say every team has weaknesses, so we'll see what the Swedish team brings up.
Yeah, certainly. And when I'm thinking to Sweden, I thought it was a bit pedestrian, quite frankly, in their match against Belgium. It took them a long time to get that goal all the way into the 92nd minute. But I don't think they got wide enough, though I do think their physicality is a good matchup for England. I think I give the nod to England, however, in that one. I still think that they are pegged for the final in my mind. Now, let's look ahead to that next semifinal, your German side against France. What does Germany need to do to advance in that match?
Well, they haven't been scored on yet. I mean, it's just like they weren't the favorites before this tournament, but they kind of felt comfortable, and they won each game, and they just showed also like the English team power in the offensive, not being really challenged. And it felt like Austria was the first team might have challenging them, and it's going to be interesting because this French team, you will say now what their strengths are, will challenge the
team. Yeah, I mean, you look at this game that they played against the Netherlands. I thought their wide play was very good. I think they're going to have the opportunity to attack the outside backs of Germany. But the reality is that they were far too wasteful. They had so many chances that they did not finish against the Netherlands. And if they are wasteful in the same way that they were against the Netherlands, against Germany, I think Germany advances. But I think that is going to be an exciting matchup, a physical game. And quite frankly, I'm looking forward to the both of them.
Me too.
All right, that's all we got for our semifinals. Kay, back to you. We'll see who plays in the finals next Sunday.
Thanks, Danielle. I'll be back in the seat tomorrow, but those two will be with me. It's England against Sweden in the first of the semifinals, Tuesday, 2:30 Eastern on ESPN2 and also on ESPN+. And don't forget, we are now 18 days away from the kickoff to La Liga. Our countdown continues, showcasing the sides to look out for today. It's Villarreal. What I will tell you is it's not just Robbo who's been having these big name interviews this summer. Yeah, I went to New York and actually sat down with Unai Emery, overshadowed now.
No, you did.
I'm sure your interview was better than mine.
You know what? She won't tell you this, but they had like paella in front of them, and they had all sorts of appetizers and tapas and all sorts of things going on.
Let me tell you, we didn't have any of that.
Everybody thought we didn't eat it, by the way. We did eat it afterwards. Yes.
Unai Emery was so nice, so engaging.
He was very nice. He said that the objective, well, one of the objectives for the season ahead was top four, that's what they're hoping to achieve. Do you think this side, Villarreal, can actually have a realistic ambition of making the top four?
I thought they had a realistic ambition for top four last season. And that's why last season was so disappointing for Villarreal in La Liga. So now, People will focus on the run that they made in Champions League, but that only masks what was a really, really disappointing performance, certainly early on in league play, where you just didn't have the consistency, you didn't have the productivity, they were throwing games away late. And to be fair to Villarreal, they depend very heavily on what they do with Gerard Moreno up top. His injuries really limited what this team is able to do, because not only does he score the goals, but he's also a guy that can be the link between the midfield and the front line. He's a guy that gives you hold up play, he has quality on the finish, and most of all, he is an important presence for them. When he's around, there is a sense of security and a sense of, yeah, we have a chance because Gerard is going to do something special for us. When he's not around, people are looking around. It's like, is it going to be Chukwueze? I don't know. Maybe Danjuma? I don't know. Gerard Moreno gives his team personality in the final third. Without him, they became very limited last season at times. And again, the Champions League run only allowed them to feel better about themselves in the overall picture. But their league performance, they finished seventh. And not only were they seventh, they were 11 points from fourth. So they weren't even close. And they were better in the second half of the season than they were in the first half of the season. So, look, disappointing year in league play, but I think this team is built to compete for, at the very least, that top four position.
Yeah, they're in the Europa Conference League this time around, but as Ale mentioned, those Champions League wins, they knocked Juve out, they knocked Bayern out. I feel as though Unai Emery is getting some of the respect that he lost by some, not everybody, when he was at Arsenal.
Yeah, and quite rightly. And when I saw Villarreal last season, I thought at times they dominated games in terms of possession. When it's a slow game, they know where the next pass is, they can create overloads, and particularly in first half of games, against Real Madrid early on in the season at the Bernabeu, they controlled the ball and Real Madrid couldn't get it off them. But there wasn't an end product, and mainly because Moreno didn't play in those early games. And then they didn't always defend well enough when it mattered. In the Champions League against the bigger sides, they showed they had the other side of the game where they can not have so much of the ball and defend well and try and play on the counter-attack. So I think they've got all the ammunition, they've got the tactical understanding. It's whether they can be consistent enough. But that Champions League run should give them and Unai Emery confidence going into the season.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to see how they do this season. Villarreal, they will be in action when La Liga gets back underway, and you can get your first look at them. They take on Valladolid on August 13th. You can catch all of those games on ESPN+.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And do not miss Football America's the latest edition drops tonight. Seb and Herc have been speaking to Zach Steffen this week.
I'll be on Football America's tonight. Oh. Yes, I will.
There's no stopping you, is there?
Look at that.
Well, what can I tell you? You know, they give me an opportunity.
And you
I
take
am
it.
Blessed.
Yeah.
I am blessed that I get to be with Sebastián Salazar.
I mean, really. It's great. It's not quite sitting down and having all these...
Well, not the interviews, no.
These big interviews, like the talk show host.
I should give an interview to you someday about your career and your goals.
No, that's quite all right. It's going to be very short.
Oh. It's going to be short. Anyway, this would be short, but we've got extra time coming up, so make sure you stay with us. We will have your tweets answered by these two guys. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We've got Ale Moreno and Stuart Robson here with us. Not quite as coordinating as last night, but not bad. I like the summer look, summer blazers.
Very summery.
Very summery.
Summer breeze, baby.
Bit of linen, and I'm not quite sure. What's that?
You like it?
Yeah, oh, very nice.
It's chambray.
You just asked if it was Pepe and Pepe.
He didn't get that one, did he?
No.
Crepe paper? I don't know what you would call it here. Let us know. Answers on a postcard. All right, for Stuart, which Italian club do you see being the most competitive in the Champions League?
I think it has to be Inter. I still think they've got a very good side. They've still got excellent players. They've still got a coach that I think will develop them again. I think they're best equipped in Europe for the Champions League. I don't think Milan have got quite a good enough set of players.
And obviously Juventus do not have the training
regimen. They're not going to be fit, are they, Juventus? Because for the last 4 years, they haven't had a hard session.
They're playing catch-up.
In case you missed the show tonight, Nagelsmann has had a few things to say about Juve's training methods after training Matthijs de Ligt for Bayern so far.
Maybe he's just saying that de Ligt isn't fit. And de Ligt said, I haven't trained properly.
Maybe. Lukaku coming back to Inter, something to do with what you're saying there, then?
Yeah, because when he was there, as long as they get the best out of him and play to his strengths, as they did when Antonio Conte was the coach, because you know I love Antonio.
Yes, you do.
It didn't take me long to mention him. and they get the ball into him and he links up with his fellow strikers. I think he should go back to the form he showed 2 years ago. Yeah.
I am so disappointed.
That I didn't mention wing back.
I know. That was going to be the key to the whole argument. Yep.
Dumfries down the right-hand side. Yeah, no Perisic, though.
Oh, that's a problem.
That's a problem. Big problem.
Yeah, he's nicked him, hasn't he? All right, for Ale, do you think Tati Castellanos will have a successful season in La Liga with newly promoted Girona this upcoming season?
Well, the issue for Tati Castellanos is going to be the fact that however many chances he was getting with NYCFC, he will not with Girona. So he's going to have to be ready to run for 90 minutes and maybe get one half chance, one opportunity. This is a team that likes to play, that likes to create certain things, but once they take this jump into La Liga, there are going to be many games in which they're going to be defending quite a bit and they're going to be in their own
half. Is he a player that I've seen him several times. Is he a player that when they're playing deep and under pressure that can hold the ball up and score goals himself by running off?
Well, I think he can hold the ball up, but I don't think he's going to take on three and four guys to create his own chance. So that's where perhaps there's going to be an issue in that if you spend a lot of time defending, once you win the ball, if you're Girona, you throw numbers forward, maybe take a chance going forward. Maybe that's how you create an opportunity. But if you're only attacking with twos and threes, I just don't think that he's going to get as many opportunities, of course, as he did with NYCFC. And if you're not getting as many opportunities, can you be as productive? Well, clearly not.
Yeah, we should all get sent out to Girona to go and see just how he's doing.
Absolutely.
That would be very nice. We'll definitely put ourselves forward
for that.
What do we need
to ask?
We'll do some talking. And then, Stuart on the call for the game.
We know that Stewie can do some interviews. That can help us out.
Yeah, exactly.
We could all go, couldn't we?
Superstar interview.
Yes.
You can do the commentary. I'll do the interview.
It's going to be great.
I'll stand at the side of the pitch like I used to. All right. For all, start, bench, or sell these iconic haircuts. This is generous. Okay. Rodrigo Palacio ponytail.
All right.
Rat style. R9 World Cup or Hull at Milan.
Okay. Wow.
Who was the second one?
Ronaldo.
Ronaldo.
Brazilian Ronaldo.
Well, I'd love the Rude Hullet style. That's got to be the one I'd pick.
You're picking the one with the most hair.
I'm picking the one with the most hair. Ronaldo can do something about that. Palacio, I mean, what are you thinking?
Well, here's what's going on with Rodrigo Palacio. And we know this very well, Stewie. The rest of his hair is gone. And so he is taking attention away from the rest of the hair, and let's focus on the ponytail.
The hope I'm having, it's not religious or anything, is it?
It's not religious reasons.
No, you made this conversation a lot more serious than it needed to be.
I think we had to, just in case.
Let's establish, you're with Hullet?
No, I'm taking Brazilian Ronaldo.
Okay.
It's an iconic World Cup haircut that, by the way, ended up in a World Cup title. So there's some value to that. You win the World Cup, the haircut becomes even better.
Hullet won the European Championships with that haircut.
I know, I'm just saying. But
Was there anything better than watching Rude Hullet when he was playing at his best, driving forward and that hair going all over the place? It was iconic.
And scoring in that final against the Soviet Union with a big header.
The head.
Should have brought it up to Craig last night. He's got a great relationship with Rude Hullet.
Has he or not? He didn't like him, did he?
Well, I think it was the other way around. but anyway, Robbo, what was the hardest line or track you had to record for the new FIFA game?
Let me tell you, 40 sessions of five, which were 5 hours long, everything was hard by the end of those sessions. And you don't, remember, you don't see anything. So you're just talking to no pictures. The longer ones are the hard, the introductions after I have to answer Derek Ray, they're the hardest ones because you've got to get them absolutely right. You can't make any stumble. You can't, the voice can't go whatsoever. So they were always the hardest to get right.
Do some of the lines make you chuckle?
Oh, they always make me chuckle. Right. Yeah, yeah. Any line that Derek says makes me chuckle. And, right. And his pronunciations make me even more.
Did you get the pronunciations right?
I follow Derek to the absolute T, apart from Fernandes. I don't do Fernandes.
Okay.
I do Fernandes.
I think you eat the whole thing, right? Fernanch? Something like that.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I'm the same with the Portuguese names. All right, Ale, we saw Neymar diving in a friendly. Do you think that it's okay? Or is it okay only if it's a league game?
Hang on, you're talking to a massive diver here. Hang on.
That's why he's been asked.
Whoa. We don't need this negativity. First of all, I wasn't a flat-out diver. I drew fouls. There is a difference to that. So I'm not in favor of the flat-out dive, the one that there is no contact and you just go down. If you draw contact, then feel free to go down as much as you possibly want. There's a difference there.
It's an art form.
It is an art form. And Neymar, at times, has been very good at it. But I think he, much like his career, his diving has not improved. It's gotten worse.
Does anybody take any notice of his diving now? Do they take any notice of anyway anymore?
Well,
The question really should have been to Stevie Nicol, because all I ever heard when I first came over here, Stevie Nicol saying, this man here used to frustrate him because every time they played against him, he went down, got a penalty.
He was asked how he would have played against him recently on one of these extra times, wasn't he?
Yes. And Stevie, it's amazing that I've been retired now almost a decade. And Stevie hasn't coached and I even longer than that. And still, when he starts talking about this, he gets angry.
Did Maras get angry?
Even
more so, I'd imagine.
Well, no, but it was with Stevie. And I always tell the story that Stevie with the little glasses and stuff, and I can't understand what he's saying. Even now, at times, I can't understand.
Did he do that as well?
Yeah, and
push his glasses up.
At Gillette, so when he's in the sidelines, they're behind the advertising board.
Yeah.
For some reason, that's sort of the setup that they had when, I don't know if that's still the case, but so he would bang on the advertising board, hey, and he's talking to me. But I'm not sure as to what he's saying because from afar, with his little glasses and the teeth showing, he's like, he's smiling at me. It's like, why is this guy banging the board, pointing at me, and smiling? Didn't quite make sense then, still doesn't make sense.
He loved you then, he loves you now.
In a very unique way.
Oh yeah, he definitely said he wouldn't get anywhere near him because he knew exactly what Ali would do. All right, Robbo, who would you rather be stuck on an island with? Stevie or Bobby Gould?
Well, Stevie would bore me to death about Liverpool, and Bobby Gould would just, he'd come up with stupid comments anyway. No, I love Steve. I make out. We had that little fracas.
Little
fracas at the Champions League final.
You were very intense.
Intense. There was reasons for me being intense that day.
The good thing is that you seem to have let it go.
No, I let it go completely, and I took it all out on Stevie. Anyway, I get on very well with Stevie. I could have a nice laugh with him. Oh, I went round his house once for a barbecue. He can't remember it, but I can.
I bet you remember that the meat was very well done.
Yeah, that was well done, and the beer was flowing. That's all I would say, but not in my direction. And Bobby Gould, I've had lots of chats with Bobby Gould since he was a manager. I like him as a character now. I just didn't like him as a manager. Mm. Would I want to spend time on an island with him? No.
So you're going to go with Stevie Nicol?
I'll go with Stevie Nicol.
Yeah. All
right, nice.
It would be very entertaining with Stevie for about, I don't know, the first hour or so, and then he would get angry and frustrated, and the sun is beating
him. And then he'd have to talk about his gout and all those.
Yes, maybe that's the solution.
Yeah.
He's not going to have the food that he needs.
Get stuck in an island, no beer.
He's not going to be helping you make the shelter.
He's not going to have coconut juice, is he? Or coconut water. He's not going to drink that, is he?
He's going to have to.
He won't be able to make his bolognese or whatever it is. Or
shepherd's pie.
Shepherd's pie.
Yeah. Shepherd's pie. Yeah. No.
I don't think that Stevie's survival skills will take us very far.
Well, he nearly didn't survive Spain when we went over there to do the Champions League.
That's like saying else.
He went missing for 2 days.
The sad news is Robbo's going to go missing now, and we're just going to be seeing him back through the little box in his house or the
last
studio.
Day.
It's been great to have you on.
It's been an absolute pleasure to be on the show, and I really enjoyed Lambeau Field as well, even though we had a couple of breaks, but it was good.
Yeah, and even though the sprinklers almost got you.
Just about.
He swerved those ones. He almost dived, but he just subtly moved out of the way.
With quickness? A little bit of quickness?
No, I couldn't because I was plugged into the thing under it, and I was trying to get the mic out of the socket, which didn't go down. I couldn't get it out, so I had to just stand and take it.
Going sideways, not forwards. I don't know if that's anything to do with the career, but yeah.
Wow.
It was always going backwards. I should have gone backwards, really.
All right, thanks so much for sending in your tweets and your questions, and we thank Robbo for being with us. We hope it's not too long until he's back here in the studio again. Join us tomorrow, more Extra Time and a lot more talk on ESPN FC.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.